By now, you're probably familiar with one of the things I like to do when I preach, which is to set the context of the biblical text we have for today. I like to remind folks of what has come immediately before so that we can understand perhaps a little deeper what is going on in our story. Today, there is no context, because we start at the very beginning. That is perhaps one of the points of these narratives from Genesis. There was nothing before God created. Now, we are into the second chapter. There is a complete first chapter. There is a complete first story of creation. That's the one where there's night and there's day, the first day, night and day, the second day. This is a second creation story, not an extension of the first, but very different in style. And the impetus for writing, recording this story. In the first of the creation narratives, God is somewhat far off. A bit aloof, one could say, slinging the stars into existence, dividing the waters and the land in great motions. The God in our story today, a little bit different, literally down to earth. This is the God that's got dirt under God's fingernails. God is there and present, breathing directly into his new creation's nostrils. This is a God who is with creation. So the story goes, there's nothing, and God creates and begins with plants and rivers and trees, but decides to make someone to help care for this new creation. And so God, from the dust of the ground, forms the first human. Now, it's fun here to play with the language a bit. In the biblical Hebrew, earth is Adama, where we get the name Adam. So I like to say in English, an equivalent would be dusty or clay. Someone suggested humans from the humus. Again, that God caring, creating, I can see God perhaps on God's knees, a big straw, gardener hat, making things happen with God's hands. God creates a garden. And in the garden gives every possible thing that the human might need. But does set a boundary that there is one tree that the human is not to eat of. We won't go into Genesis chapter 3, but many of us know that this story does not end well. One way to make sure someone does or doesn't, or one way to make sure someone does something you don't want them to do is to tell them not to do it. Humans overreach. All that they have is not enough. They want more. Again, we know how that story goes. But back to this story. So God creates this human, breathes life into its nostrils. It becomes a living being. Plants the garden. There's some language about rivers. This is very much, again, the ancient story of putting things in context, noting the world's great rivers, at least world known to them. And then God says, it is not good that the man should be alone. Again, this is a bit of a contrast to the first of our biblical creation stories. Remember how that one ends. God stands back and looks at creation and says, what? It is good. God has God's self on God's back. That's all right. I did good. But in this story, there's something that's not good. Something that does not have an equal, a balance. And so God decides that God will, for his human, create a partner. And so God, again, from the ground, forms every animal of the field, every bird of the air, and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. The human gets to name all the animals. I guess from aardvark to zebra, going through. Now, one of the commentators that I listened to their podcast said, you know, this is funny. We should laugh at this. Imagine the scene. The human's alone, there's no partner. God wants this human to have a partner, so God creates all these animals, parades them in front of the human, allows the human to name them, but also there's this sense that both are looking for a suitable partner. And so first comes the aardvark. No. A big cow chewing its cud. No, that's nice, but that's no. On and on it goes, through all the animals one could imagine. And there's none to be found. So God does this interesting thing, causes sleep to fall upon the human, takes out a rib or a side of the human, and makes something else, someone else. I imagine Adam waking up, sees the first woman, known to be named Eve, and the reaction is quite different than the aardvark, than the cow, and the snake. Wow. Holy cow, holy mackerel. Someone suggested woman came from, whoa, man. But Adam is blown away. The beauty of this new creature. And so, they are to become one flesh. They are to live together. And before I move on, I want to make sure that we address this notion of a helper. Several times in the text that's mentioned. Unfortunately, of course, over the history of the interpretation of this text, helper was interpreted to be subordinate. Right? Adam came first, place of primacy. The woman was a bit of an afterthought who was there to help the man. Not at all what is being said. What is being said is very much helper in the sense of a partner. One that completes the other, in a sense. One that is a correlation to the other. And that there is no sense of first means best, because that would mess up the order of other things. No, the word helper very much means one that is to walk alongside, to be an equal in a relationship. We need to push the point any further. The Hebrew word for helper, the only other person for whom this word is used in the Old Testament is God, God's self. And God is not subordinate. All right, so we have the story of creation. What are we to make of this? I think there are a few things. First, again, that interesting fact, there is no context really before this story, but there is something that is missing if you think about it. Did you ever notice the Bible does not begin trying to prove that there is a God? You open the Bible not knowing any of this, and you begin to read, it is assumed that you believe there is a God. So if the story is not trying to prove the existence of a God, what is it saying? Ultimately, it's trying to say, what kind of God is the God of this story? What kind of God are we called to believe in, to place our trust in? And the God that is shown in this story is a loving, tending, creative God. A God that makes and gives and offers life. The point of these stories was to present a God that was in drastic, perhaps, contrast to the gods of the nations around the Israelites. Gods that were vengeful and spiteful and hateful. Gods that were petty and destroyed things on a whim. This is not that kind of God. This God is creative and loving. Second thing perhaps to draw from this story is the clear indication that God is God and we are not. There is creator and creation. The two are different and separate. It's important to know as the story progresses, because if we understand that God is God and we are not, that prohibition of eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil should carry some weight. God said, don't do this thing. Maybe we should listen to what God is commanding. And of course, we know how that story goes. We don't have a very good history of listening to what God says. God's commands don't carry too much weight. Incidentally, the idea that God is God and creation is creation carries itself out in other ways. There's a lot of spiritualities or philosophies that kind of think of creation as God itself, right? There's divinity in all things. And from a biblical understanding, that begins to confuse that distinction between creator and creation. We need to be careful of that. It's the heresy of pantheism, if you're taking notes. I remember as a child at Marlow Ridge, we used to sing a song, "Have You Seen Jesus My Lord?" And it was, "Have you ever looked at the sunset with the sky mellowing red? The clouds suspended like feathers, then you've seen Jesus my Lord." And it goes on to talk about the beauty of the ocean. "If you've looked upon the ocean and its rolling waves, then you've seen Jesus my Lord. I look back at my 12-year-old self and say, heretic! That's pantheism." But I'll cut myself some slack. I didn't know. All right, so there is a God, a loving God, a creative God. Second, there is God, and we are not that God. There is creator, creation. The third and final thing to note is the interdependency of it all. The interdependency, the linkedness, the connections between not only this God and God's creation, but between all of creation. The human, the human's partner, of the animals that the human names, of the garden that the human is called to till. God gives a vocation, gives a purpose to the humans, till this. As I created, so you too shall procreate. That interdependence finds itself spiraling through the entirety of the story of Scripture in different ways. It's first how we are to live with this God. This God that chose to create us. We are dependent on that God, and how that God puts God's self in a place to ask something of us, which is to freely give our love. There's the interdependence, of course, of the humans themselves. But they are equals. That all people are created equal. We should act like it. You know, interdependence is different than codependence. Codependence is where one person's needs become greater than the other's in a relationship. In an interdependent relationship, the needs are balanced and understood by all parties. And so it should be. Not only with humans and God and humans and one another, but humans and the earth. We are not told to dominate the earth. We are told to till and care for it. Which I guess is a final point I'll throw out there. I don't know where folks are on this idea of climate change. I know there are deniers. There are many folks who deny that. It always boggles my mind, though, why we have to get to the point of talking about human extinction to understand that we are to care for the earth. Why do we have to get to this argument when clearly the story begins with the goodness of earth and the lifting up of how interdependent we are on creation? And so we are called to care for creation. Not to push it to the limits to see how far we can go before we threaten our own existence. So we begin today, we'll see these themes throughout the rest of the story. Humans challenging this interdependence with God and with one another. Humans pushing things to the limit to see how far they can go. But we begin with a firm foundation that our God is a good God, a loving God, creative God, and we will see a very patient God.